Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
An old friend lay on his dying bed, held my hand to his bony breast, and he whispered low as I bent my head, "Oh, they're calling me home, they're calling."
One of country music's most distinctive and acclaimed artists, two-time Country Music Association Female Vocalist of the Year, Kathy Mattea, will be returning to the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Saturday, the 1st of February, for a concert at 8 o'clock. She is known for such hits as Where Have You Been, 455 Rocket, and 18 Wheels and a Dozen Roses. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Kathy Mattea back to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks. My pleasure, really.
Again, the show is February 1st, 8 o'clock, Saturday night. I think maybe the last time you talked, you were doing a holiday show. And so how long have you been on the road with this particular run?
We took a little break for the holidays this year. We didn't do a Christmas tour. So we've been off and kind of resting up, and everybody's been kind of hanging with their families and taking a break. And so we're just hitting it back. This will be our first weekend out for the spring push. And so we've been doing this. This is around my latest record, which is called Calling Me Home. And we've been doing it for most of last year and into this year. And so it's really fun. I've kind of taken some new risks this time. And I picked up the banjo after letting it sit in the corner for many, many years. And have sort of added a couple little instrumental things to what I do and challenging myself, and it's been really fun.
The album is absolutely beautiful, Calling Me Home.
Thank you. A
collection of songs that really celebrates the culture of where you are from, West Virginia.
Yes. I made this record called Cole before that, and it was life-changing for me, and it happened because of a big mine disaster, and I just was surprised at how much grief I was feeling for people back home that I didn't know. And so that led to the inspiration to make this record about coal mine and pull out all these old Appalachian songs. And when I was finished, I felt like I'd just begun to scratch the surface of this wonderful tradition of music that was around me when I was growing up, but there was nobody to teach it to me. So I decided to dig a little deeper into that and sort of widen the scope a little bit. So the record's really about Appalachian life and the relationship people there have with a sense of place, and it's just been really fun.
What do you think it is about the Appalachian life, the culture, and the music that make it so distinctive?
Well, it was born, I think, out of isolation in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, I remember before the interstate went in when I was a kid, the interstate got opened up when I was in college, but there's one stretch between my hometown, Charleston, and Lewisburg, and it was a 90-mile drive, and it would take 3.5 hours because you were on windy roads through the mountains, and you never got above third gear if you were in a standard shift car. And, I mean, it was still that isolated when I was young. And so, you know, people don't gear up for, you know, what would be a 90-mile jaunt, a day trip to go visit somebody. You know, you had to think long and hard before you made that drive when you don't have that kind of corridor opened up by the interstate. So that allowed the music to sort of steep in on itself, and communities got glued together by music. And even my parents and me to some extent, you know, we knew the land around where we grew up. My parents knew every inch of the mountains that they grew up around.
Mm.
They knew where to go. My dad knows the best place to go deer hunting and the best place to get dandelion greens and where you find the molly moochers, which are a certain kind of mushroom. And, you know, all those things were just part of some people just took it for granted. They didn't know that everybody doesn't live that way in the rest of the country most of the time.
When you talk about culture, and I was thinking about this last night as I was listening to the album, that there is still that isolation, and we still we look at that of how affected that area and the state can be by coal and by industry, and with this most recent spill, a chemical spill, that affects so much of the state and so many residents, it's a striking balance, isn't it?
It's very much a striking balance. I mean, my entire family has been without water since last Friday.
Wow.
One of my cousins just got water back this morning, but the rest of my family still doesn't have water. And when I started to read about this and talk to everybody back home, it just slammed me back to so many memories. Memories of my dad on a Saturday afternoon sanding spots on the car because he worked at Monsanto. And when the car sits in the parking lot of Monsanto, the chemicals in the air eat the paint off the car. Just chemical spills when we were kids. You know, how much cancer there was in our valley, just all of that stuff. And, you know, you're in a place where good jobs are scarce. Industry needs a hardworking base who won't complain too much. It's not very densely populated. There are rivers so that they can take coal and chemicals up and down, and there's good rail lines. So, you know, it's a great place to put all this stuff. But it's also really kind of a catch-22 because, you know, here are millions and millions of gallons of a toxic chemical a mile above the intake for the largest water treatment plant in the state. And, you know, how does that happen with nobody going, hey, maybe we should think about this, you know? And these are the kinds of things that really happen far too often back home. And that tension between regulation and safety and job opportunity and prosperity is kind of all has kind of always been there in some form, from what I can tell.
When you explore that, I mean, not specifically, but when you explore that in an artistic way and in the larger word of a cultural way, do you see a resonance with people who are not from West Virginia, but then can suddenly now understand a little bit more about the place?
Well, you know, I think that's the opportunity that music gives us. One of the things that has been surprising in a wonderful way, what I learned from doing all these songs about coal mining, I thought, oh my God, you know, I'm going to travel to New York. I'm going to travel to the Midwest. I'm going to travel out to the West Coast, and I'm going to sing these songs, and are people just going to be like, we don't want to hear it? Mm. You know, this is not about us.
Mm.
But what I've found, surprisingly, is that the human struggle, the human compassion that these stories bring out in people for each other is where people connect with it from. And the connection has been really consistent. People have said to me, people who have nothing to do with it, with coal, have said to me, oh, I just enjoyed that part of your show so much. I just really, it was just really enriching. It's and so I kind of got to see firsthand how our specific stories can sort of open up a universal common experience that we might have that might not look the same on the surface, but we've all felt frustrated. We've all felt helpless. And in many ways, we're all vulnerable to our leadership and mistakes that have been made that in the past by leaders that have consequences that could not be foretold that we're living in, you know. And so there is a sort of universal aspect to these stories.
And as you mentioned, that album, Coal, came out of tragedy. It came out of a coal mining tragedy. And so it seems that would resonate because people, as you see the reaction from the entire country when that happened, that it may be a foreign concept, and yet people in need is not.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we've seen our share of all kinds of disasters and people in need in the last few years, you know, from natural disasters to, you know, industrial disasters of all kinds, all over the country and the world. And so, you know, it all of these things wake up something in us that's about our common humanity. And I think that's what music really does best. When music's really at its best use, I think that's why it has this kind of mysterious quality that we're drawn to.
The album starts off with it just very, and there's a mood to it, isn't it? I mean, there's a striking fiddle just right at the very beginning, and it's almost eerie. It's a lovely way to start, but it sort of sets the tone for the entire album.
I've always been drawn to acoustic music and bluegrass and stuff, but there's something about this older Appalachian roots music that brings a blues, it has a real blues element to it that I think is sort of my window into that kind of soulfulness that I, maybe in a deeper way, it was like, I can't really do blues, you know, I'm not really that kind of singer, but I can do this music, and this music has a very clear blues element in it, and that kind of lonesome, yearning, kind of pining thing. And I think that may be the thing I've enjoyed most about it. I mean, you know, I just went to hear Nashville Bluegrass Band, a legendary group of musicians, over Christmas, and their lead singer is named Pat Enright, and I'm telling you, man, he is as soulful as any old blues man you've ever heard. He's just amazing. So I'm constantly sort of inspired by that. It's a far cry from here to Virginia, but I'd crawl every inch of that ground. My teardrops fall like rain on the roof of that Blue Ridge home where I'm bound.
The other thing that I found both with this album and with Cole, and I've heard you say this, that you actually had a fear because you didn't grow up singing this type of music. Even though it was a part of your culture, you weren't singing these Appalachian songs. So even when you found the songs that were appropriate, you wanted to be authentic to them.
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to do was sound like a lounge singer, you know, like somebody kind of making the sound but not really getting into the depth of the emotion behind it. And luckily, you know, Marty Stewart produced that Cole album for me, and I really felt that I could trust that if he said I did okay, that I could trust that. I still struggle with a part of me that longs to be able to sing this like the people who I've heard back home that just, you know, have it in their cells. And Marty would say to me, it's in your blood, it's in your blood, you can hear it. But it's hard for me to hear that in myself. So I do feel like there's a constant, like, it's kind of weird, but for me, there's a kind of constant striving to let go, you know, to let go of, like, how I know to sing and to just trust that this song will come through and I don't have to try to get it across to you. And that really, that's the story of being a singer for me, you know.
Is that harder when it's live, when you're doing it as a part of a show, where these songs are then taken out of that context?
No, they live in a different way to me, and I love the balance between the live and the recording. The recording, you can just sort of, you can get deep in it, and you can, you know, savor the nuances of what people play and how they respond to each other and how the lyric lives and sort of make a definitive version. And then you take that out on the road, and it becomes a living thing. And so, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been in some restaurant or some public place and heard some, or on the radio driving down the road, and I hear some old song of mine, and I realize I sing it much differently today because I've had an ongoing relationship with that song that's progressed. And I can appreciate the original version, but that also helps me see that the song is alive for me still, because I'm in it. I'm not just mimicking that original performance.
A longer relationship with the song, but also a maturation as a singer.
Yeah, exactly. That's one thing that really struck me about these Cole songs and the old Appalachian songs, is so many of them, you know, have a lot of tension in them and a lot of poignancy and a lot of hardship. And I think when I had a really innocent voice, I don't know that I would have come up. There's a depth that comes into your voice in middle age, and I think it serves these songs really well.
Kathy Mattea will be at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Saturday, the 1st of February. Saturday, February 1st at 8 o'clock. The new CD is Calling Me Home, which is absolutely gorgeous. Kathy, it would be wonderful to have you back in the region, and I thank you so much for sharing with us this morning.
Thanks so much for your time. I've enjoyed the visit, Joe. Thanks so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Kathy Mattea at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, Saturday night, 8 o'clock on February 1st. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.